You're listening to a Least Important Things miniseries.
Ahoy, mateys. Welcome aboard Podcast of the Caribbean with your scalawag hosts, Mike Wynn and Luke Ferris. It's time to set sail. Drink up, me hearties. Yo-ho!
Welcome to Podcast of the Caribbean, a special rewatch miniseries from Least Important Things, where we set sail to discover the legend and the legacy of the Pirates of the Caribbean franchise. Your captains for this voyage will be me, Luke Ferris, and my old buccaneering mate, Mike Wynn. Mike, how are we doing today?
I'm doing phenomenal. I'm ready to leverage this.
ready for some leverage and proper application of strength. Joining us on our motley crew today is our number one, number two man, Zach Hall. You know him from Mission Impossible 2 episode of Podcast Impossible. Zach, welcome back.
Thank you. Can you please refer to me as your second mate going forward on this voyage today, Mike and Luke, please? Thank you, guys. I'm really happy to be back. So,
thanks. Yeah. You're definitely the second mate.
Once you finish mopping the poop deck, we can refer to you as that.
I read that the second mate, I did research actually before I recommended this title. I read that the second mate is in charge of navigation. So I will also do that for
extra. Would you please navigate yourself right to the poop deck?
Yes. Yes, sir. Captain. I don't know.
Captain, who's the captain, sir. Co-captains. We're kind of co-captains. It's gotcha. More like guidelines. You're going to have to help us navigate, Zach, because there's a lot to navigate in this film. But before we get into Pirates of the Caribbean : Dead Man's Chest, what is your history with this franchise besides me forcing you to be on this podcast and making you watch both the first and second movie within 48 hours of each other?
Besides that, I'm always here for the sequel, essentially the second in a series or a trilogy or just like six really long movies. So I always consider myself as the unlit, not the person that does Empire or The Dark Knight or The Godfather 2, the greatest. I'm the one that does the Temple of Doom. So that's why I'm here. My history with this specific property, though, this came out right as I was going to high school. Very important time in all of our lives. Also, really important time for all my friends who were in band. So before I even watched this movie, because I didn't watch it in the first one in theaters, we had a concert featuring the band kids doing the entire soundtrack of Pirates of the Caribbean because they were obsessed with that. Band and all of our theater kids in high school were obsessed with it. I didn't watch the first one in theaters. I did watch it, I think it was still DVD back then. But then I did see the second and the third one. So Dead Man's Chest, which we're talking about today, and World's End, I did see in theaters. I vaguely remember those.
Were you working at the movie theater while you saw this, or did that predate you, your experience at the theater, your career at the theater?
I would have been in the midst of my first year working for NCG Cinemas. I think it's a top 25 theater chain.
Still going strong. Country.
Yeah. Come on. Shout out to that that place. But I remember selling tickets for these specifically. It was a very busy, kind of like towards the end of pre-Disney, pre-like big Marvel blockbusters. They were churning these out, So, that was definitely there.
These were big deals. Like, we will joke about this movie today and we will have a lot of fun, but this was a big deal and we'll get a little more into it. Mm-hmm. Before we dive into the background, thank you, Zach, for sharing your journey. Your voyage with this franchise. Mike, I want to do a check-in. This is a new thing on the show. Did you make it through this movie without falling asleep? I just want to do a nap check-in for Mike. Because it was a long movie.
I actually did watch this movie start to finish with no naps.
Wow. I'm proud of you.
It's so that he could make this podcast recording.
Yeah, yeah. I am infamous for falling asleep during movies. I famously fell asleep in the middle of The Avengers in theaters.
That's absurd.
Another moment of Mike Wynn falling asleep during movies. I famously fell asleep in the middle of The Revenant, which I think most people can understand.
It's real cozy in that bear.
It does. It's very cozy.
So I have a long history of falling asleep during movies, not for lack of interest, but just it just happens.
I can't explain now it. You have it. You didn't do that in our Mission Impossible theater episode or our Jurassic theater episode. So maybe when you're more in tune, and
actually,
you know, you have to record afterwards.
Hold on. I absolutely fell asleep during Jurassic World.
What?
Yeah.
Yeah. I did. I'll have to re-listen to that. I don't remember you even admitting that.
I'm pretty sure I did. I would have to think. We could do a mini game next podcast. I could go out back and I could think through the movies I famously fallen asleep in.
Well, the last time we hung out, you fell asleep in the middle of the first John Wick, which is a very loud movie. So that's just impressive skill
that's,
sets.
That's actually true.
It is very impressive. Well, that's been our Mike Knapp check-in. We will do that every episode moving forward, especially as these movies continue to progress in the runtime. All right, gentlemen, you ready for some background on Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Man's Chest?
Yes. I didn't know I needed it, but there needs to be some context to this movie.
Context is important. That's why we like to share this. Yeah. All right, gentlemen, this film was released on July 6, 2006, so 4th of July weekend, big movie weekend. Guess what you could have seen that weekend? You could have seen Cars, the first Cars, The Breakup, X-Men The Last Stand, Click, Nacho Libre, The Da Vinci Code, and Fast and the Furious, Tokyo Drift. So some other franchises that are still going or happening around the same time. Dead Man's Chest had a budget of $225 million. I don't know. Did you guys look at this sheet and see what it made? Do you guys want to guess how much it made globally?
Well, globally, yeah. I mean, it would have been a huge success, I would think.
Yeah. $1.66 billion. Yeah. It was a billion dollar film.
Was it the second $1 billion film after Titanic?
No, Lord of the Rings, The Return of the King was a $1 billion film globally.
Okay.
So, but this is the beginning of the $1 billion era, like Zach alluded to earlier. This is pre Dark Knight trilogy, pre Avengers, but we're starting to get into the billion dollar territory as far as films. But this was 3 years after The Return of the King. So, It's about to ramp up a lot more.
Honestly, I feel like this franchise is just trying to prove itself. And I heard you guys' last episode. There's a lot of Lord of the Rings like legacy that it's trying to always fight. And I think that that's why this property was made, is just to prove that Orlando Bloom can do more than just be an elf.
He can do more than just Elizabethtown. He can do more than that. But you're right, Zach. This is the post-Lord of the Rings franchise. We have Harry Potter going on during this era, but this is kind of the biggest franchise post-Lord of the Rings. Mm-hmm. Okay, I just wanted to make a point. Curse of the Black Pearl had a $140 million budget, so it was almost double the budget, and it raked in just over $650 million globally at the box office. So let's just say this sequel, for whatever it is, it definitely was profitable and a great business venture.
Has it come out in you know, the years afterward, how much of that budget was actually just Davy Jones?
No, but I'm sure it was a lot.
Yes.
And I don't know what Johnny Depp's contract was, but I'm assuming a lot of the budget started to go to his contract moving forward. Especially as we get into 3, 4, and 5. Okay, here's the crew. Almost the exact same crew. We have Gore Verbinski back, Jerry Bruckheimer, Ted Elliott, and Terry Russo return as writers. The cinematographer returned. Hans Zimmer came in. So this is something I didn't realize. I thought Hans Zimmer did the first one. He actually came in on the second one. So we're getting a little Hans effect here. ILM did the effects in the makeup. I just want to call those out because, first off, the makeup and special effects are pretty spectacular, especially on Davy Jones. I think that's held up really well. The film stars the cast from the original film, Johnny Depp as Jack Sparrow, Orlando Bloom as Will Turner, Keira Knightley as Elizabeth Swan, Jack Davenport as Norrington, Jonathan Pryce. I guess we can't say him Commodore Norrington. We just call him Norrington now.
Yeah. He's been stripped of all names. He's just,
yes, of all names. Jonathan Pryce, Governor Weatherby Swan, and then the newcomers, Bill Nighy as Davy Jones, Stellan Skarsgård as Bootstrap Bill, Tom Hollander as Cutler, and Naomi Harris as Tia Dalma. I really like the newcomers. I think that's one thing about this franchise is they have the budget to bring in the talent. Also, Skarsgård, I think he's a pretty stud franchise guy now. I think he's got Marvel. He's got this. He has Dune now. I'm trying to think if he has another one.
Yeah. He has a franchise of relatives also doing a bunch of other franchises. His progeny just disseminated into other things. So, yeah, he's a franchise dude.
The Skarsgård franchise as a family has covered a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
All right, ready for some interesting facts that you can fact check yourself. I'm not going to do the work for you.
How many of these is one of these made up and we have to figure out which one?
No, they could all be made up. Okay. But again, I'm not going to do the work for you. Fair enough. Okay, Gore Verbinski. I like this one because I'm a huge Bill Nighy fan. Gore Verbinski originally wanted Davy Jones to be Dutch, Captain of the Flying Dutchman. However, Bill Nighy responded and said, "I don't do Dutch, so I decided Scottish," which I love. That just builds the lore of Bill Nighy just kind of doing whatever he wants. The Kraken was very difficult to animate, and it had no real-life reference. And, Zach, I think you would like this. The crew were instructed to watch King Kong vs. Godzilla in 1963, which had a real octopus in it, to be inspired as far as miniature work goes.
I mean, there's plenty of other places you can find footage of octopi, but okay, cool. Yeah, great.
Yeah, that's it. That actually seems like bullshit because I know, isn't 2,000 Leagues Under... Oh, that's a squid. 2,000 Leagues Under the Sea. That's a squid.
Yeah.
There's also another Disney property. Deleted footage of Tortuga from Pirates of the Caribbean Curse of the Black Pearl was added to the final cut. The Skarsgård makeup took 4 hours to apply. 4 hours, which I believe. I think it looks great. Like, it's disgusting. Like, the coral and just the nastiness.
That starfish is probably hard to keep. Ugh. It probably fell off every time he blinked.
It looks great, though. While the script was being written, Keira Knightley suggested the scene between Jack and Elizabeth where Jack is handcuffed to the ship. Wow, Keira. If that's true, I want to believe it's true because it is a great part of the film that you don't see coming. The texture of Davy Jones' skin was made by scanning a dirty coffee cup and applying it to the screen using Photoshop.
It's Zach, 80 degrees here, and I just felt like the temperature dropped real hard. Yeah,
a dirty coffee cup. We all have
that person.
I've seen the bottom of a couple dirty coffee cups.
I think I was that guy, Luke.
Oh, I was too. I think Zach and I cleaned up a couple dirty coffee cups in our time together when we worked together. There was, especially if you would find one that had been sitting somewhere for like a week or over a holiday weekend. Ugh. That's Davy Jones' face. And then our last fact is when Mr. Gibbs enlists new recruits at the tavern, a bunch of men are pulling a man out of a well as he slowly spits out water. This is a recreation of the scene from the ride. Is that correct, Mike? Do you remember that?
It's actually a phenomenal animatronic because, as you can imagine, robots and water don't go well together.
Yeah.
Reference the Jaws ride at Universal Studios and all the issues that they have with that. It's a great little homage to the ride. This movie was nominated for 4 Oscars.
It was?
Yes.
I just assumed it could be nominated for that.
It won an Oscar for best visual effects. Let's play a game called Does this movie have 4 Oscars than Dead Man's Chest? So I'm going to give you guys a movie and you tell me whether or not you think it has more or less Oscars than Dead Man's Chest.
Okay? All right, I'm ready.
Movie number 1, The Shawshank Redemption.
More.
Less.
You're wrong. It actually had 0 Oscars.
What?
Yep. Yeah. So the Dead Man's Chest, more Oscars than Shawshank Redemption. Movie number 2, Taxi Driver.
Less.
Less.
Yeah, less. It has 0 Oscars. Wow. Movie number 3, Once Upon a Time in America.
More.
More, yeah. Yeah, that has more.
Yeah, than... you're wrong. That actually has zero Oscars.
What?
Movie number four.
There's a trend here, Mike. There's a trend.
Movie number four, A Clockwork Orange.
Oh, that's no. less. Yeah, that didn't get nominated for anything.
Yeah. And movie number five, Citizen Kane.
Less. Again.
More. Yeah. More.
Yeah, famously zero Oscars for Citizen Kane. Yeah, yeah. So as you can see, Dead Man's Chest, better movie than all of these. Continue.
By Oscar logic, it is a better movie than all of those. Yeah, and you're right. I guess you're right. Thank you, Mike, for that context. Wow. That's it's a good reminder that the Oscars aren't truth. But the special effects are great. Okay.
Yeah, that deserves the Oscar.
It definitely deserves the Oscar. Watching it with fresh eyes in 2024, it still looks amazing. And I think that goes to the performance of Bill Nighy, but also the special effects. Okay, to frame our narrative, I wanted to introduce another viral YouTube video from my youth. We talked about why is the rum gone in the first episode. This is another viral old internet series called Ask Ninja. And he did a review of this film that I've seen this video probably 100 times, and it still makes me laugh today. But I think it will help us understand what we're getting into in the beat by beat.
Here goes the ninja with the ninja review of Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Man's Chest. Okay, I don't want to spoil it for anybody who might not have seen it yet. So I'll tell you this one little thing, just to give you some context. It's a horrible movie. I went and did the research on like how they came up with this movie, and it was inspired by old school robot pirates. Like I'm talking Chuck E. Cheese style, like sub Chuck E. Cheese style. So that was where they were starting from the movie, and then they basically took a step backward. It's worse than bad animatronic pirates. The structure of the movie, the best that I can tell, is they loaded about four or five different screenplays into a shotgun and then just pulled the trigger and then sent somebody around, like a PA around, to just pick up random words and piece them together and then hand that to the actors. And then even that script was lost about halfway through shooting, and then the director just made it up every day. It was just like, and then today, this person shows up and they're a pirate. The other thing about this movie is everybody was a pirate. Just everybody. If you were in the first movie and you weren't a pirate, you're now a pirate in this movie. Everybody gets to be a pirate. It was ridiculous how many pirates there were. I mean, and I'm not just saying that because I don't like pirates. I'm just telling you, there were just too many pirates. Some of them were fish pirates, and some of them were had always been pirates, and then some of them were half dead, and some of them were full dead, and some of them were just pretending to be pirates. The only thing to which there are more than pirates in this movie are plot lines. Everybody gets a plot line. If you're a dog, you get a plot line. If you're a ship, you definitely get a plot line. All the ships get a good plot line. The ocean gets a plot line. If you're just a single body part, a lot of times you have your own plot line. Like if you're just an eye or a heart or something, you get a whole story. But they don't finish any of them. They think about it, but then they just keep adding more plot lines. Like literally, the last line of the movie is a new plot line. It's a never-ending story, but with no Luck Dragon. One other overall note about the movie that I thought was very interesting was the entire cast, with the exception of Keira Knightley, was women. And I thought that was a bold choice. All the pirates, you could tell because the heavy, effeminate eye makeup and the long-haired wigs. If you don't know Keira Knightley, she's kind of a slightly more mannish version of Orlando Bloom. And the direction, I don't know that there actually was a director, but I'm told that a name came up and it said Gore Verbinski, and I'll tell you this much, it could have used a lot more gore and a lot less Verbinski, which I think is Russian for bad dialogue. The big thing that they're fighting this whole time is this Kraken that nobody can beat. Kraken! 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 Trust me, I have fought a Kraken! 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 It's not that hard. If this movie was called Ninjas of the Caribbean, ninjas don't just amble around doing bad Keith Richards impersonations. We get the job done. There's a chest. It doesn't matter if there's a dead man in it, or a dead man on it, or a dead man. We're gonna get the chest and get it back. Ninjas of the Caribbean would be a great movie. And by the way, there's this alleged pirate code. I don't think that exists, because they go against it. There's no honor amongst pirates. And apparently there's no honor amongst filmmakers, because whoever made this film didn't really care about the fact that it was going to be terrible. Here's my advice to you regarding this movie. Save your money. Just dress up like a clown, jump into a giant aquarium, bury him and sing the lyrics to Hit Me With the Best Shot by Pat Benatar backwards. At least that will make more sense than Pirates of the Caribbean Dead Man's Chest. Wait a minute, there wasn't even a dead man in it.
No, there wasn't.
Wow.
I do remember Ask a Ninja, and that, that was so good.
That is one of the happiest moments of my life right there, is rewatching that with you guys, because I've seen it so many times and it still makes me happy. And to watch it in the context of reviewing this film and going beat by beat just gives me a lot of joy.
I think he's just going to hit it. We're going to hit on exactly the beat by beat what he was hitting at as well. I mean,
yeah,
for the most part,
yeah. We could honestly just make this a podcast about that.
Just reviewing, ask a ninja minute, just each minute, just break down. And just he's our real navigator through this. Okay, let's do it. Better late than never. Let's jump in, boys. So Dead Man's Chest, definitely a tonal shift for this movie. The opening shot, it feels different. We have basically Elizabeth's wedding is ruined from Lord Beckett.
Oh, I thought the rain. I thought it was
and the rain too.
As soon as I saw that, I was like, "Oh, this is gonna be a wet movie. This is gonna be a very wet movie."
There's gonna be a lot of moisture.
Yeah,
and I think the introduction of Lord Beckett is great. I do love him as an actor. I love that character. They both actually, I think, a year previously had worked in Pride and Prejudice together, and they were kind of antagonist as well. So this is a back-to-back for both of those guys. Then we have the rescue of Jack from the pirate prisoner of Azkaban jail, and he escapes through a coffin. How do you guys feel this Jack Sparrow opening was compared to the first one? I think this is a trend we need to follow. So how do you rate and review this Jack Sparrow opening coming out of the coffin floating?
It's definitely funny. But I also thought like the coffin broke apart way too easily.
Yeah. Well, he shot the bird, which I thought was funny.
I thought that was funny.
Yeah, I don't know if it can match what Black Pearl honestly did. Just like the way that camera was used for that intro in the first one was very different. This one just seems like, it's... You kind of see it coming too, like, oh, when's Jack going to show up? Is he on the ship? No, he's probably in this coffin. You know it's a Jack scene, and you're just waiting for him to pop out of somewhere. So
I think immediately with this opening, you're starting to see a trend of repetition, which I think this movie falls plagued of, is repeating the same bits, the jokes, the characters from the first movie at nausea. So Jack, the plot line is, again with the plot lines, there's lots of plot lines, but first plot line that I noticed is Jack is in the same position when he first lost the Pearl. He seems to be not in control of his crew. And I think that's probably the first plot line that I noticed.
Yeah, and the crew also not in control of themselves. So they give Marty a line in this, finally. Favorite character, Marty. He's the smaller person on the crew. But he does say something really out of, I don't know. His first lines are, "The captain seems to be acting a bit strange, ..
Yeah, that's a great one.
And that, I think that's kind of like a good representation. Yeah, it's out of sorts though. I think everything on the ship seems out of sorts. So it's probably going back to, like you said, like no Black Pearl, Captain Jack kind of thing. But that kind of caught me off guard too. That's a great, interesting first line, I would say. I don't know.
Stranger. It's definitely stranger. This film felt like the fourth installment in this franchise. I don't know why. It just felt like this was the fourth or fifth movie. It did not feel like the second film, because they were pulling so much from the original one and leaning into fan service almost. But I don't know if we needed, like, we know we're seeing a Pirates of the Caribbean movie. You don't have to continue to repeat the exact same things. Yeah. But we're along for the ride. So the villain in the first movie, we believe, is, and we kind of made a decision, that is the British Empire. That's the real villain in the first film. The villain in this one, I believe, is corporate greed, i.e. the East India Trading Company. What do you guys think about bringing in the corporate entity who seems to take control of Port Royal or whatever it's called, and they're in charge? Because Governor Swan is not in control. He can't do anything.
I think they're just an annoyance at this point. There's just a lot of it. It's trying to motivate plot, but there's also over on the other side of the sea, like another plot motivation that's happening. They're there. I think we have to have the imperialistic white people as a, you know, as a villain in these movies. And yeah, this is kind of like the start of it. I can't remember how it plays out later after this movie, but I know that they're just kind of there in the beginning and the end kind of thing. So yeah, I'd say this character in particular seems, especially when he first is introduced, he's like, oh, this is a nasty little white dude. Like, but yeah, really he's just kind of there sitting at a desk pointing at a box.
That's really,
I feel like, I don't know. I don't think that that's accurate, Luke, because while the English Empire, you know, kind of takes over, you know, the control of this port, really the focus is on this Beckett character.
Beckett, yes.
And it's not Lord about
Beckett,
his...
Lord Beckett now.
Yeah, Lord mm-hmm. Beckett, I'm sorry. Yes. It's not about his position in the company, but rather his desire for something that has nothing to do with the British Empire. So I almost feel like,
the key.
Yeah, but the key to unlock what? So I almost feel like the villain is like covetousness.
Okay.
And I feel like that's reinforced by the fact that the compass, as we learn later on, doesn't point in a cardinal direction. It points you in the direction of what you want
the most, which I think is clever. I like that, because in the first film we just think it's a broken compass. But Beckett knows about it. We learn that he has back history with Sparrow, although we don't learn about that. We just learn that there's back story. Before we move from Beckett, there's something that continues to come up in the movie, is that guy painting the map wallpaper. I think it was beautiful. I want that wallpaper, that map painted in my office. I was like, can I hire him? That guy's doing great work.
Yeah. What's his rate? What's his hourly?
I don't know, but he was taking time. And
yeah, I'm sure it would be quite a pricey commission, though.
Okay, so Jack has a key.
He has the compass, Luke.
No.
There's so many legendary items in this.
Well, I think that's another thing about what Luke was talking about, is everything is like from the coattails of Black Pearl stuff, like all of his effects, as you guys called them, as yeah. we refer to them. They're just trying to give, they're like his, he has all the magic items of the world, and those are his yes. effects. And apparently one of them is this piece of paper with a key drawn on it.
Yes.
Yes.
And then Will is sent to go get that. No, not the key. The
Will is tasked by getting. Are you? You're doing this on purpose?
No, yeah. No, I'm not. I generally not. Will is Saturday asked, night. It's been like 4 days since I've seen the movie.
Will is tasked by Beckett to get the compass because Beckett wants the compass to lead to the key.
Oh, which he wants the compass.
Yeah,
because the compass would lead to.
The compass. You are doing this on
at
purpose.
That point. No, point I, movie, I'm seriously really not
because
why?
Because Beckett. Yeah, he needs the key to get to the heart. So he wants the compass first.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and as an audience member early in the movie, we don't really understand the purpose of the compass. All that Jack shows his crew is, here's this piece of paper with a key on it.
Yeah.
And we're gonna, so I'm going to look at my compass and not give you a heading. Like, he never gives them a heading in the first half of this movie.
Right. So the paper of the key isn't really, it's for the audience.
Yeah. Okay. So we can keep track of that plot line as the other plot line.
The paper key doesn't really matter. There's a key. And the compass gets to the key.
Yeah.
So that's the first thing. Okay. That's great. That is great. And then is that when they do we when do we meet? Oh, that's when we meet
Right.
That's
after.
When we meet.
Yeah.
Bootstrap.
Yeah, he Bootstrap goes below East. Deck yeah. after, and then he comes. Yeah, then yeah, he meets Bootstrap.
I think that's a great character. I think Skarsgård, he's a great actor. I really like it. I mean, it makes sense when you have the lineage you talked about in the first one to bring him in and the makeup, and it's pretty spooky. And this movie does feel darker in that way. I don't know. The first film, yeah, there's some intensity, but it does feel overall very light and fun. I think that's part of just Jeffrey Rush's character acting. This one definitely has a darker tone. But I like it. And obviously, Jack's freaked out because he gets the mark yeah. from the handshake.
The dark mark.
Oh, the low five. Yeah, the low five.
The low five. Mm-hmm. Like, kind of like the creepy uncle five. Like, yeah. you know, it's like, okay, high five. That and that's a that actually is from pirate lore, I believe. The black mark. Isn't that yeah. then you start, isn't that what they would run the flag if there was like there was actual disease or death?
No idea.
I believe that's what it was. The black mark. You would run it. You would fly it on your flag, on your mask.
Treasure Island reference, actually. I thought it was. Treasure Island yeah. also has it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That book. Yeah. So basically, Jack is on a timetable. He's like, get to land. I'm in trouble. Because if he's on sea, his time's up, and he's got to pay his debt to Davy Jones. So he runs the Black Pearl aground. And Will has to find him. He says, leave the hat. He loses his hat. So that's another kind of reference to the first film.
I did want to actually bring that up because I feel like between this and the next scene, headgear has a lot of power in this world. So, because, yeah, Jack loses his hat. And I feel like that's him also losing his captainhood, like for the rest of this movie.
You're right.
Because when he gets it wow. back, it's a pretty pivotal scene. Later on at the very end of the movie. And then also in the next scene, Governor Swan loses his symbol of power. His wig is taken off and he never gets it back actually during this movie. It's very interesting. I don't know if Swan ever gets his wig back, but I also, in the first movie, I felt like Swan's wig was like a measurement of time. It got grayer yes. as we got longer into the movie. So now that whole idea is out the window, but I like yeah. that. It's either that or he's the eighth Horcrux. I'm not sure.
Yes. Zach, you're getting really good takes. You're making Gore Verbinski look really good.
This is why you bring me into the second to make it good.
Yes, this is why you really help boost the intelligence of the film and the lore of the film.
Aye, captains, yes.
So Elizabeth definitely loves Jack. Are we all...
No.
So here is why I think this movie is good.
Okay.
I believe that Dead Man's Chest is introducing the Disney world to polyamorous relationships. It's ahead of its yes. time in this way. So yes, I think if we want to be progressive and inclusive in this day and age in 2024, we must look back to Dead Man's Chest.
Dead Man's Chest. Yes, it was really the pioneer.
I don't think we need to really it's not a competition at this point in this movie, whether she loves Jack or Jack loves Will or Will loves Jack the monkey or like
it's all love
or Elizabeth.
Like, as long as you're a pirate, there's definitely love.
It's just as I imagine it was back then, just general love for
general love your crew. Because when Norrington, she has a lot more empathy for Norrington now that he's a pirate, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah, she just feels bad. But yeah, I think this is, I don't think it matters. There's definitely something there though. And that's what it's a very thirsty movie. It's very wet and thirsty.
It is thirsty. It is thirsty. The tension is feverous.
It's
I don't want to do this anymore.
Sorry guys. I won't bring it up.
It's
too
a sexy
much
movie. It really is building the tension.
Yeah. Exactly.
Kraken symbolism. There's a lot going on there. There's a lot going on there.
Exactly. So rewatch it, everybody, for those scenes.
Yes. Yeah. You'll see the movie a lot differently.
For the throuple scenes. Make sure you watch this PG movie.
This is before Edward, Jacob, Bella. I mean, this is really breaking barriers here.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Exciting.
It's PG-13.
It's PG-13. So candlestick getting broken by Governor Norrington. We have the dog with the keys. We have the hat. I'm just listing off callbacks.
Pinto and Rigetti also come back around this time, right?
Or they come back. So we learn that they escaped jail. At first, I was like, where are they going?
Yeah.
How did they get the Black Pearl? But their goal is to, again, everybody gets a plot line. Their plan is to get the Black Pearl back. So they're chasing the Black Pearl. Will's chasing the Black Pearl. It's run aground. All right. Now should we talk about the Return of the Jedi, Ewok, slightly racist, Temple of Dune-esque native scene on the island?
Oh, God. The cannibals?
This is not aged well. This film actually is not... film was not allowed to be shown in China because of the cannibalism.
And they don't... They can't play this up... This one on Netflix either. They took it away. They took that one out of the series for Netflix.
It's out. Out. Yeah. It's out. What do you guys think about this whole concept?
Well, hold on. Your comment about the film not being released in China, yet grossing over $1 billion.
That's crazy.
Isn't that insane?
It is insane, especially because I believe where we're headed in the franchise, I think the fifth one, maybe the fourth one, is heavily funded through China. So there's an irony there.
Whoa.
I could be wrong. Fact check it, folks. We'll talk about it.
I just didn't want this scene to happen again, so I wanted as much financial control as possible.
But it is crazy. Like, for an internet, like a global box office to hit $1 billion without China is... You don't see it very often these days.
Mm, you're right.
Okay, so this is a callback. This scene is technically a callback. When Jack in the first film, when he's talking to the two British guys, when he's on the Interceptor, they cut in media res of him telling a story when Elizabeth drops in the water, and he says, "And then they made me their chief." That's his line in the first film.
"And then they made me their chief."
So to me, this is either a callback or they're inspired from that line that was a throwaway line. So either this was already the nation that Jack had been made chief, or they just did it again. I don't know if you guys caught that.
I didn't catch that, but I think that that's clever.
Yeah, I was wondering how he would so quickly become a god to these people.
I assumed that he was like, well, I'll go to land. We'll go to this island. It didn't seem like he was that strategic, but I think that's either a callback or they're pulling from the first movie.
Wait, so that's why they went there? Because there's no point, right? Otherwise,
was there any other point? To me, that's the only point to go there, besides just getting to ground.
Oh,
so
this movie,
or maybe he was following the compass, and that was what he really wanted, was to go back to be chief.
Maybe.
But we jump in, and obviously Will's looking for them, and he finds out that the crew is stranded in a monkey ball contraption, and Jack is the chief, has the gray eye makeup with the multiple eyes, which I think is cool. He's the chief, he's a god, but they believe that that to elevate his deity, he needs to be consumed or free from his mortal body. So Jack is going to be consumed. So he's that's why he says to Will, "Save me."
I will say everything on. I know you said that this like scene doesn't age well. This like this movement in the film doesn't age well. But I still think it's the funniest. Like every moment of the of them on this island is some of the funniest stuff on the island or in the movie.
It's very goofy. It's very goofy and fun. It's a little bit, I guess it's more the fun part of the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd say like, this is definitely inspiration. Like if they wanted to make a brand new ride, this is the scene that inspires that. I mean, in the escape itself, you've got Cage Roller, you've got Cliff Diver, and then you have Fruit Ninja. All great parts of a ride that you could add into.
Yes, the Fruit Ninja I really like.
I did love the Fruit Ninja.
Yeah, it is fun and a lot of
Mike, if you're going to adapt this to a ride, what ride would this be? If we were going to add a new Pirates ride from this scene of Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Man's Chest, how would you make the ride?
Oh, like a new scene within the current ride.
No, a separate ride. Or it could be a new scene within the ride, or it could be a separate ride. Because this feels like more of like you could make this a roller coaster.
I would say you could make this a roller coaster, and your ride vehicle could be like the the monkey ball that you were referencing. Mm-hmm. You load up into these,
mini death cage match.
Yeah. Death cages made of bones of the crew.
Which
is a good line. I did like that.
Let's bookmark a couple of things that happen on this island.
Okay.
For later on, for at the end of the movie, I have a summary of observations I'd like to make.
Remind me.
We'll come back to this.
I did like Jack's toe necklace. I don't know if you noticed that, the necklace of toes. That was a nice touch.
I did not notice.
Former crew members that is placed on his neck.
Doesn't he bite off the toenail on one of them?
He does. I was watching it with my wife Audrey, and she was like, "What? Why?" And
that's
I was like,
"Big toe too. It's the biggest toe I've seen it was in my life."
That's an interesting choice by the movie to have him do that. I think to show that Jack is even more strange than usual. Jack does a lot of running in this, or I should say Johnny Depp does a lot of his waving running. It seems to be working pretty quickly because he's moving fast.
Yeah, not quite the same kind of effect of Tom Cruise running in movies, but
it's not the same.
Fun nonetheless.
It's not the same, that's for sure. The crew gets out of the monkey balls, which I do like. I like how they have the two competing groups. And it really shows that they're pirates, and they make a joke, or they one of the guys throws away. It says, "Well, you only need six people to really man the Black Pearl," and then everyone's like, "Oh wait, dang, this is a race.
Let's go!" Yeah,
which I think is really fun because it's a race now.
It raises the tension internally too, right? Because you already have the tension set for like why they're in those. That prison, if you will.
Yeah.
But now there's tension even within the crew, which makes a lot of sense. They're pirates.
Yeah.
So
we have we have almost three groups trying to get to the Pearl. We have Rigetti and his buddy who go on a rowboat in. We have Jack trying to get back to the Black Pearl. And then we have the two former Black Pearl crew members trying to get to the Black Pearl. And it's pretty fun. But eventually they get to the boat, and a very sad scene is the dog with the keys becomes, which is that a teaser at the end? He becomes the new chief?
Yeah, that's like the after credits scene. But I honestly, the sadder part was looking at the cannibals' faces. They're so sad. They're the saddest cannibals of the Caribbean. It is like kind of depressing. And then they see that the dog. And then he runs off with those. Did he even have the keys anymore, though, like at that point?
He had the keys because apparently it seems like the dog let the two guys out because he's on the boat with them.
Yeah. So yeah, I felt like he left him on the island in that scene. He ran away with keyless. So I was curious about that, but I digress.
I do like the line that Will says because he and this is a fun kind of playing with the character where Will's very loyal and more of the Boy Scout. He's like, "We can't leave Jack." And then he sees Jack running with the entire cannibals behind him. And he says, "Time to go."
What about Jack? I won't leave without him. Time to go.
All right. So Elizabeth, meanwhile, stay with us, folks. She's trying to get to Will. She gets out of jail from her father, and then she confronts
Beckett.
And I like that scene a lot. What do you guys think about Elizabeth's storyline and her progression?
Mike's
he's all over the place.
I don't know. I mean, I like Keira Knightley a lot as an actress, and obviously, I think that she does a really good job acting into her role. I find some things a little far-fetched. I don't know. She just seems so knowledgeable about everything. I don't know how to describe it. Like, we made mention that, like, even in, like, the first movie, like, all of a sudden she knows how to shoot a gun. And so there's, like, some of these things is just like, oh, I didn't realize that she was an expert.
I noticed that in the first one as well. It feels like the writers want to give her agency, but then they want to also take it away as quickly as they give it. Like, there's often that, and it's kind of like, hey, we're trying to make her a relevant character and not do full damsel mode with every scene that we have her in. Especially in this movie, they're trying to, they give her pants, which is, oh my God, thank God. And she has a lot more ability in this movie, I think, than the last one for sure. But it's hard to like really be satisfied with that because it doesn't feel authentic. And like that piece of trivia that you brought up, Luke, I feel like is some authenticity from like the character actually doing something that's a huge piece to the plot.
Rather than just chasing around and like, oh, do you like Jack Sparrow? Because the compass is pointing at him. Do you like pirates?
Yeah.
I think the dress as a symbol works. It's a little on the nose, but I mean, I'm just happy for her that she got to like remove that part of the character. They do mention, or she does mention as a character, that Will trained her in sword fighting, which I really appreciated that they added that. And I don't remember seeing that the first time I saw it.
But she was.
See, I thought, yeah. I understand that, Luke, but she said it as innuendo.
Oh, really?
Yeah. There's a lot of that.
Again, pretty kinky. I didn't notice that.
It's thirsty. There's a lot of stuff that's like.
Is she
more upset that her wedding, and you don't understand why she's upset about her wedding being ruined. There's like some things that are like innuendo throughout that too.
That's right. I remember watching it with Audrey, and she was like, yeah, she's very upset that her wedding night didn't get to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. And,
which I get. Will Turner is a good looking guy.
Yeah, what was I going to say? I mean, yeah, she said it as innuendo, and something that Shannon brought up when we were watching. Friend of the pod, Shannon, my wife. When she opened up the compass just to make sure it wasn't pointing at Jack, Shannon was like, why are they trying to make this like a thing? Like, it's cheesy. It's not a thing. Like, there's not tension there. And Luke, we talked about this like in the beginning of the or in the first movie where like you're like, oh, is there chemistry there? And I'm like, I don't think there is. Like, there's chemistry between the actors because they're both very talented actors. Like, they fit on screen. But this and I expect Jack Sparrow as a pirate to just be driven by lust. This idea that I almost feel like she should be so driven in one direction, and like this idea, I don't know. She just, it's at times, let me back up and put it this way. At times you can tell that the way she's talking to Jack and manipulating him shows that she doesn't have any feelings for him, but she's leading him on to get what she wants. Right. And then there are times where the way her character is portrayed, that she's like conflicted. And it's
I see what you're saying.
That doesn't make sense to me.
Cause to me, her arc, as far as the movie goes, is she's enticed about being a pirate. Like, ever since she was a kid, she was excited by pirates. And I think it's the symbolism of freedom and all the things Jack believes in. And I think it's a good point, Mike, because that's interesting if that tidbit is true about Keira Knightley suggesting that final scene, because Jack actually respects her. He's not like in love with her. He respects her, and he's like, you're a pirate now. Like, you got me. Like, you bested me. And that it wasn't about them as a relationship. But it's a studio movie. It's a Disney movie. I think that's the hard part, is you're not going to get consistency. And again, they're not focusing on her because the dog needs a plot line. The eyeball needs a plot line. Like, everybody needs a plot line. And you can't really go delve deep into it, so you get little moments. But I think watching it again, I am glad that they did a few things to help her character have a little bit more dynamic feeling than just part of a love triangle, that I think at the surface level, that's all they really care about.
Yeah. It's definitely bridging on a strength for the movie, I'd say. Towards a strength. I don't know if I can say it's perfect.
I agree.
But yeah.
It's a strength. One of my favorite lines with, again, when they're trying to leave the island is, I can't remember what guy says it, but he says, mooring line, mooring line. It's one of my favorite repetitions.
Don't bite it!
Hold loose the mooring line!
I don't get the joke.
That one was for me. So Elizabeth, she is stowaway on a ship. I think that's really fun. I like how she messes with this trading company and does a little puppeteering with the dress. It's a little silly, but I like the idea is that because at that time there was so much superstition that it would make sense that those guys would freak out if they saw a floating dress, which I enjoy.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of mysticism in not just pirate lore, but just in society at around that time, you know. I was just actually reading about the Salem witch trials, which were in the 1690s. And so like, just kind of, it's just true. It's not far-fetched to believe that some siren, you know, happened to float onto the ship and is now a stowaway.
And then she's trying to get to find Will. Will is with Jack. He found Jack. He's trying to convince Jack to come back and... No, he's trying to get the key. No, the compass. He's trying to get the compass. He's trying to get the compass.
Yeah?
He's trying to get the compass.
No,
yes.
No, he doesn't even need to get the compass. He just needs to get Jack back to Beckett.
Yes.
Because Beckett will pardon Jack. That's the thing is like...
Oh, with the pardon papers, right?
Yeah. So there's, but
which Elizabeth steals.
Yes. So and Will doesn't know that because he's already ahead. Yeah. Of Elizabeth.
Elizabeth and Will are not on the same page because Will, she's free. So like the whole point of saving her. I mean, to get like her record expunged, I guess would help. But then Jack manipulates Will to essentially go to Davy Jones. Which is, I mean, of all the times that Jack's screwed over Will, this probably is the worst.
I mean, we're only two movies in.
That's true. To me, this is the worst because he says, hey, just say I'm here to pay Jack Sparrow's debt. Which, Will, I was like, come on, Will. Come on, Will. My man. Let's think a little.
See, I respect it. I respect it because I would expect the Disney movie part of this to just be like, oh, he's a reformed pirate. But he's obviously like,
that's true.
Still, that's just true. Out for himself.
No, I like it as well, but it's like it's more just like, well, come on, man, it's rough.
Yeah, I think this series of movies leans into the Jack Sparrow anti-hero so much that like Will's kind of like this disposable Luke Skywalker of the entire franchise.
Yeah,
and they're kind of making fun of these moments where it's like, oh yeah, your everyman hero is gonna do this for because he's honorable and trusting and stuff like that. So it is more comical and just kind of making fun of some other movies where normally that would save the day.
Yeah, you know? That's true. And that's actually rewatching this series. That's one of my biggest takeaways. Is I think when I first watched it at a younger age, I kind of hated Will, and now I understand what they're doing is they're making it as a joke of he's the Luke Skywalker, Clark Kent, pure guy, and you're contrasting that with Jack, who's not. So he gets on this boat, which I think is a pretty intense scene where you have like this shipwrecked boat. You have all these sailors that are either dying or going to die because they're stranded. And then we see the Flying Dutchman emerge from the darkness, the abyss, and we meet Davy Jones himself, Bill Nighy. Let's talk about Bill Nighy's performance of Davy Jones. The look, the squid face. It's still such a great character. To be able to show that much emotion, anger. There's a lot of anger in that character. We understand there's a backstory of he lost his great love. We don't know if it's the sea or if it's symbolic. He plays organ. It's a great villain character.
Are we at the Oregon? We're still in the intro. I think that the Oregon scene creeps me out, by the way.
Yes.
It's just too much for me.
With the tentacles.
The tentacle. It's like, I don't know. There's weird textures that I'm imagining in my brain that entire scene. Plus, like, there's, so he's got a lot of tentacles, but there's also that one weird little elephant trunk off his left cheek that just dangles.
Mm-hmm.
And that's this, when you introduce, it's like a pimple. Like, I just want to pull it off. Oh,
yeah.
But when he's introduced, it's a pretty cool scene. Like, you don't know what you're expecting with Davy Jones, including the accent, which I think in that first scene, he's still trying to find.
Still trying to find it.
I feel like he throws a little bit of like a French accent in there. I got like a little bit of Spanish. Like at first, I was like, he's kind of like trying to find it in like this open.
He's around the European lines. Map, and then he's like, I'm up here. I'm and up here. I'll like, just choose Scotland.
Is that? Yeah, it's Scottish. No, it's Dutch. Yeah. No, they're gonna lean with Dutch. Nope, that's Scottish. Okay, it's not until he really projects his voice, but in that first couple lines, he's like whispering, so it's really hard to like even.
It's so good. I love it. And then we have that. Apparently, they have a superpower of being able to jump through space and time because,
yeah,
basically they find out that Will was sent by Jack Sparrow, and then they do that jump cut where Jack is looking through the spyglass and Davy Jones is right there on deck. So that's a magical power that they have. But it looks cool.
Yeah, they actually stole Governor Swan's wig in a deleted scene. It's a time acceleration.
A time acceleration wig. That makes sense.
They were like, that would be too robust of a plot if we kept that
up. Yeah, yeah, they cut that one out. It was like the Flash, essentially.
Yeah. Davy Jones introduced to the DC universe as well.
Yes, there was a crossover there.
Honestly, and could only help at this point.
Could only help. Jack tries to talk his way out of it. He says Will has a terrific soprano, which is, you know, I'm surprised we didn't get a musical version if that is true.
That's a eunuch joke.
Yes, yeah, so the eunuch comes back as well. We get another eunuch joke. So basically, this is where one of the plot lines that is most interesting in this movie, Jack is required to pay his debt to get 100 souls and give them to Davy Jones. Doesn't really matter. And Jack's like, well, Will's worth at least 5 souls. So then they go to Tortuga to basically get souls, basically trick people to join the crew so they can give them to Davy Jones. What are the rules of the souls? Like what? Because it's confusing to me.
Any souls? Souls.
Just souls?
Yeah. Rubber souls.
I've got soul, but I'm not a soldier.
Yes. Yeah. It's boot souls. Because
Bootstrap Bill. Maybe he's worth
Bootstrap Bill. Yeah. There we go.
Yeah. Maybe so that's the name. Yeah.
They go to Tortuga to get these souls. To get people, they only sign up 4 people. But one of the people they sign up is former Commodore Norrington, who is worse for wear. We did learn earlier in the film that he retired or was forced to retire
because he
lost. It sounds like he lost a fleet, or he lost at least a couple of ships were destroyed in a hurricane trying to chase Jack. Which honestly, I was like, I want that movie. That movie sounds interesting, but we don't get it. We just get it in story. And Norrington gets in a bar fight. Elizabeth is in Tortuga as well. And that's where she finally figures out what is happening. We have the organ music. Will meets his dad. And
Starfish.
Yeah. I actually like that scene because they yell both, Turner, go grab that line. They're both trying to do the same thing. Will messes up. He's forced to get lashed, which again, this is a darker side of pirating that we don't get in the first film, is like the indentured servitude culture of being on a ship, or just like the very intense discipline. There's a great scene in Master and the Commander, if you want to see this in more of a practical sense, which is a great film. I still think we might have to just review that film as a tag off of the series, but this is a little bit different. I would be concerned because this whip probably has some nasty infections. I mean, Will's going to die for sure within the next 30 days with all the coral and seafood. And like, that is nasty.
Yeah, because they use that whip to whip the Kraken summoners. And man, those guys, dirty, dirty, dirty boys.
Dirty. And so I think that's a great scene. It's a cool scene between the father and son about why he did it. We get a little bit more backstory on Davy Jones about like what happens on that world. We get Barnacle Brain, the guy that's living within the ship. So eventually you've served long enough, you become part of the ship. I love that scene where he comes out of the wooden part of the ship and you can see his brain. It's pretty creepy. It's really good.
Oscar worthy.
Yep. We have the dice game as well, which
I love a little dice mini game.
Yeah. My movie. What was the dice? Did you guys get it? Essentially, you're betting. It's like
you have to go in order. So you start with a number, and you have to say, you know, like 3 2s, and you're basically betting that there are 3 2s amongst all the dice. But you can look at your dice. You can't look at your opponent's dice, and then. So if I start with 3, whoever's next, they have to do 4 of something.
You lost me already. I'm already lost. I can't do it. Sorry.
Okay. So but I have to explain the compass. How the compass is involved in this.
Okay.
This is where I actually fell asleep. It was this scene.
The die. I thought if anybody you could, Zach, you would be able to explain a die based game.
There's a certain level of game that I love, and this.
This is honestly where I thrived, because I'm if you play video games enough, like there's always, you know, these big games, they always have like a mini game, you know, inside the game. This is the mini game inside of Pirates of the Caribbean, which I think is good to include. It's good to include something like this because
it's a DVD game. Like you can just play it interactive.
No. Choose your own adventure. On a serious note, I do think that though they absolutely stood on this for too long, it's good that they tried to include something about how like many of the games that we have today and play today and have survived throughout the past few hundred years come from this time of sailors going to different ports and teaching each other games. So like that I thought was cool, is that like this is how they pass time. But I would just
like a euchre game. If they could have just played euchre, that would have been understood.
I also thought that this was interesting because of here's what I did. I thought that this was a fun part of the scene, but this is also like the equivalent to me like playing Red Dead Redemption and spending 90% of my time just playing blackjack in the casino and not exploring the worlds.
And they let us do that. That's great. We're ready for the open world Pirates of the Caribbean game, Ubisoft or whatever company makes those games. So Will decides the whole reason he played the game was to know where the key was, not the key on the piece of paper, the actual key. He sneaks into Davy Jones' quarters, gets the key. His dad helps him get off the boat. He gets picked up by the traders of the boat that Elizabeth was on. The Kraken comes. We get the Kraken.
He had a Lego scene right before the Kraken comes, though. Like, he suddenly appears on the sail at the top.
Oh, yes.
And it's very Legolas, like, what your elf eyes see moment.
It definitely is.
Brought me back. I love that. That was very cool. Just like out of the same thing, like Governor Swong's wig just transported him up there, though. Like he didn't.
Yes, it did. He got up there very quickly.
Yeah.
I really like the Kraken theme by Hans Zimmer. I think the music's great. I like how they bring the Kraken up. How do you guys feel about the Kraken?
I just don't see why it's necessary.
Okay.
Like,
yeah, it's just
okay, so yeah. I'm gonna pause here. What if the dog had the key instead? Would that be more of a fun movie?
I think it'd be way more fun. If the dog had the key and half the movie was trying to find the dog, because then the dog would really have value.
Yeah. Or it would be like this whole thing is like, what if the dog had the key? And then we do all this stuff. And then the end credits scene shows up and they're like they cut out some pivotal moments, obviously, towards the end of this movie.
But then the dog had the key. Then that just seems like a better movie.
At least we'd have a conclusion. At least we'd have a full conclusion.
True, yeah.
Yeah. We have so much to get through.
Still. I know. We have a lot to get through. My compass doesn't work, innuendo.
Standing in front of a cannon. Like, he has a cannon right at his waist level going out away from him. And then I think Kieran Elizabeth's right there, right? Like,
yeah, yeah. It's pretty bad.
Yeah, it's great.
So Will gets captured again? I can't remember.
Yeah.
No, he gets away. How do we get to the beach with the three people?
I thought he was still on the ship because it goes underwater. I thought he was like, how do they do that with human people that can breathe over, like, need air?
Oh, I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, right? But he's not there.
Tell me how I'm supposed
No, he's not there. He's not there.
He, like, swam.
He's not there.
Yeah.
He swam away. He swam.
Did you catch something that maybe I didn't catch? I don't.
No.
No.
Damn. No, I might have fallen asleep.
We don't know. He said he didn't, but he was close. So we have, essentially, we get to this beach where all three dudes are fighting over the chest. Within the chest, there is papers, and then there's another. Is there another little chest?
Here's what I thought was really funny, and this is, I might get marginally canceled for this. So
marginally canceled.
I'm watching the movie with my wife, right? So this is actually an observation of my wife. So it's not me, guys. Okay,
it's Shannon getting canceled, marginally canceled.
She says that. She cannot watch these movies without, and as a witness, she does this. Every time Keira Knightley's on the screen, she goes, boobs. And Shannon's like, I don't understand why they make her so booby in this movie, because she's famously doesn't have, you know, a very big bust, right? And so they obviously like prop her bust up for this movie, whatever. So here they are on the island fighting, three men fighting over a chest. But the actress that's in the movie like, please pay attention to me, is famously somebody who doesn't have a large chest. And so I just thought that was a really funny, it's not really part of the movie, but I just couldn't, because my wife couldn't stop talking about Keira Knightley's boobs. I was thinking about Keira Knightley's boobs.
You're thinking about chest. Fun. So interesting fact.
The wrong chest to think about in this movie.
That's the wrong chest, Mike. But a lot of people were. So in the first film.
I'm a dead
film,
man, I guess. Yes, I don't know.
You are a dead man. In the first film, I didn't bring this up in the interesting facts, is that they actually used an old school Hollywood technique to make her chest appear bigger. It was like they used shadow and makeup to do that. Yeah. So it's a very real thing. Keira Knightley's talked about it, is it was an old Hollywood technique that they would use, especially when smoking, she's in those ears, dresses, to make you look like you have a bigger chest without any augmentation. So that the reason why that's such a big deal is because it was a specific choice by the creators in the makeup to do that. So Keira Knightley's actually talked about that, but so we didn't talk about it in the first film, but it definitely is.
Well, I definitely think that this podcast, a group of men,
yes,
talking about pirates, this is definitely the place we should be talking about Keira Knightley's boobs. So yes.
Oscar-winning movie, guys.
Oscar-winning movie. So they're fighting over the chest, not Keira Knightley's chest, but a different chest. In the chest is a heart, which is not an innuendo. I think it's just a heart. It is Davy Jones' heart. Mm-hmm. They need to kill the heart. Then they run all over the island with the chest. We get the mill scene, which is pretty iconic.
Did you guys note that there hasn't really been a sword fight? Like, I guess there was the one in Tortuga, but nothing epically big until now. Like, I didn't even remember Tortuga until this scene happened.
That was a bar fight. Yeah, it was barely a sword fight. Yeah, it's crazy that it took this long in the movie to get, especially to get a fighting while balancing scene, which is, this is definitely, I guess the at the island with the carnivores, there's a lot of balancing, but this is real fighting while balancing, pirate style. So we have them on the mill. It's chaos, because then I just don't know what's going on in the scene, because then the Davy Jones pirates are on there. It is just absolute chaos.
This is where my wife. Island. This is where my wife said that this movie jumped the shark. If you can believe this,
literally, she, literally jumped the shark.
She thought that the fighting. She thought that fighting on the mill was not realistic. I was regrettably informed her that there are men who compete spinning on logs in water. I also said, oh, this is the part you find unbelievable.
Yes, this is the part that really was too much for Shannon, which I get. We get Shellhead, who I like, the guy with the shell head.
Mm-hmm. Great name. Man.
When it turned into a crab, I was just, this just, I don't know. It feels like
here we are. Yeah. Here we are. Here we are with this movie. Norrington sacrifices himself. That we think, but not really. And little do we know that he has actually taken the heart, whereas our other heroes
don't. He's in a different direction, right? Like, that was the sacrifice, right?
Yeah, he's like, I'll go over here. And then he just drops the chest. Drops the chest. So now we're on the Black Pearl, and this is where it all goes down. We have Flying Dutchman chasing after Black Pearl. We have Mano y Mano, two of the most iconic ships in the Caribbean, going after it. The Black Pearl is fast, but...
There's ocean spray everywhere, Luke. There's so much ocean spray. It's wet.
You can make cranberry juice out of that. There's so much ocean spray.
Yes.
The Flying Dutchman has front guns, which I'm like, why don't they always have front guns?
And they're like... Triple barreled? Like, what are they called?
Yeah, triple barreled. Gatling gun. It's essentially a Gatling gun on the front, which I love. Just, why not? They're kind of super natural. They can have a Gatling gun. Mm-hmm. Will becomes the captain. Jack is fleeing the scene, which I like. I like seeing Will take hold. I think this is part of his journey of, like, he's a pirate for sure. Like, he is a pirate captain. He's probably a much better pirate captain than Jack would be, and he's committed. I do like Gibbs' line. Heave like you're being paid for it. That's one of my favorite moments in the movie. Yeah.
My favorite line of the movie, I can't remember if we pass it or if it's coming up, but they're on their the two pirates are on the rowboat, and the one's reading the Bible.
Yes.
Oh yeah, that's at the start. I forgot about that. Pintel and Rigetti. Yeah.
He's like, why are you reading the Bible? You can't even read. And he's like, it's the Bible. You get credit for trying. It's a great line.
I honestly love those two in this movie way more than the last. I felt like they were the Blues Brothers of this movie. With just like, there's a line that they say, like, someone's like, the sea, like, I don't remember what the prompt is, but the response was by a group of people, like, the sea, oh, isn't the bayou, the sea, what are you most afraid of? The sea, sums, the dichotomy of good and evil. Like that, honestly, shout out to character changing. Like, that's really cool. Cause they're worried about their souls, their eternal souls now.
Yeah, right. That's his plot. Like, he gets that plot. It's also very, that felt like a Monty Python line as well. He gets more of a Monty Python style. So Will does a good job fighting off the Kraken. We have some grilled octopus, which I thought was a nice strategy. You basically take the ammunition in the rum, which I love how all the pirates were like, Gibbs is like, not the rum. We can't use that as ammunition. They burn the Kraken, but it's not enough. The Kraken comes back. What, they abandon ship.
So before they do that, what if they pretty much, they tie up a bunch of gunpowder together, 6 barrels of gunpowder, but they don't have enough, so they add the rum in.
Yes.
They almost let Elizabeth shoot, and then they take that agency away from her and make Jack do it. What if Jack had hit a barrel? Because it's pretty hard to identify. What if he had hit a barrel of rum instead? It wouldn't have blown up, right? Like,
no, that would have been even better. Like, actually, that would have been more accurate to Jack.
Yeah. There was, like, I think there was way more barrels of rum compared to gunpowder. So, like, the chances of hitting it are much lower. And then just Jack's ability, like, of his effects, there's a totem in there that gives him this luck. That's my theory. I haven't watched many
of
these movies.
No, I like that. I like that. They abandon ship, which I think is a very seminal moment. Again, the ships get our characters themselves. They're leaving the Black Pearl, the title of the first movie. It's a big deal for the crew that we've met, for Jack. But Elizabeth pulls a move on Jack, a very pirate move, and locks him to the ship. And this is the very famous idea of going down with the ship. And she forces him to do that.
Yeah, I think normally they volunteer to do that.
Yes, it's that, which, but I think that's kind of the idea, is that he's not honorable. He's not an honorable captain. He's not going down the ship. Yeah. Elizabeth forces him to do that. And then Jack gets out. Of course, he's like trying to get out. He's not even accepting. He's the ultimate escape artist. But it's not in time enough. And the Kraken is upon him. And he says, "Hello, beastie," and jumps into the Kraken with his sword.
And his hat. And that's when he finds his hat is in that scene right there.
That's right. It comes out of the Kraken.
Yeah.
So in that moment, he becomes captain, even facing his fears, I guess, is the idea, right? Yeah. He faces his fears.
Because that was one of the plots, is he's running away from the Kraken.
Yes. He faces his fears. He takes the Viagra, and now he is equipped. I mean, sorry. He's equipped now, and he's ready to go. He's ready to go. It just took a while.
Such a thirsty movie.
It just took 2.5 hours to get there. And we're on a cliffhanger with the final moments of the film. Like, the Ask Ninja, Ninja Says is a new plot line. We didn't even talk about
all the scenes in the bayou with
we did not talk about Tia Dalma, the only other female in this movie. She's great, by the way. Actually, I think that's the best scene of the movie.
Yeah.
When they're there with the sand and everything. They go back to her, and lo and behold, Captain Barbossa is alive. He's going to help them get the ship back and get Jack back.
And he's got an apple.
And he's got an apple and the monkey. And that is a very rough, rocky seas, beat by beat of Dead Man's Chest. Gentlemen, we have to rate this thing before we can put this film to the bottom of Davy Jones' locker.
Before we rate it, let me quickly go through a summary of observations, quick observations that I made during the movie.
Mike's observations before he fell asleep.
Yep. I believe this movie is a movie it's an homage to cinema, okay, with many scenes deliberately planned to reference other movies that came before it. And these are just five that I personally noticed, and I'm sure this will inspire you guys to think of other ones. This doesn't even include the Master and Commander reference.
That's extra.
So Will tied up on the island, stolen straight from Star Wars. Of course, we talked about that.
Yes.
Davy Jones playing the organ is Phantom of the Opera.
Mm.
Bootstrap getting whipping is
Passion and Commander. Christ.
Oh, no, okay. Passion of the Christ.
Christ. Absolutely. That's what they were thinking of. That's what the creators were thinking of.
That's my favorite one, actually.
So is Jack the Christ figure in this? I'm confused.
It's important that we keep moving. There for time, okay,
that could take an hour.
Elizabeth cutting her hair. Sorry, I can't get past Zach laughing.
Oh, Lord, so
Elizabeth cutting her hair is She's the Man, which, of course, is based on
yes.
The Twelfth Night.
Which fun fact, her hair was short in this film because of Domino. She was wearing extensions the whole time. So that's part of the reason why it looks short.
The ball that the pirates are like running in, like basically anytime Jack is being chased, that's Indiana Jones.
Yes, that is true. That is definitely Indiana Jones. So that whole scene is Indiana Jones. Very Temple of Doom. This is Zach. This is definitely Temple of Doom. This is wild and crazy.
Passion of the Christ too.
And Passion of the Christ as well.
I didn't know I'd make it in for a Passion of the Christ episode.
If you had your Podcast of the Caribbean bingo card, Passion of the Christ was probably not on it.
Yeah, well, they didn't get to fill in their free space, which is Alias. So
there it is. There it is. Always comes back. And Mike did it for me. Oh, my goodness. All right, we have to rank these, Zach. We rank these out of 5 Jolly Rogers. The first film, Mike and I gave both 5 out of 5 Jolly Rogers. What would you rate Dead Man's Chest out of 5 Jolly Rogers?
I would rate it 2 red and 1 purple Jolly Ranchers.
What about watermelon Jolly Ranchers? That's my favorite flavor.
No, so essentially, I guess it would be 2 watermelon then and 1
not
red.
Cherry. Cherry's terrible.
Then we could call it, I'd say 2.5 jollies in total. Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're right, Zach. I think I've got 3 yellow starbursts on this one.
Oh,
it just doesn't
man.
Hold up. It's ferrying us to the next of the movies. So it's really just a segue. Like, we're just trying to get to World's End at this point. And really,
yes, we are.
This could just have been half of World's End if we wanted, but we have another 2 hours and 48 minutes to go through with that one. So I think that in the end, this is really just something that could be, it's a fun romp, but I mean, beyond that, I really can't like get a good sense out of this movie for the entire franchise, honestly. And like you said, Luke, it just feels like reiteration of the first one without having context of the future.
Yeah, it's a rehash of the first one and a setup for the third one. It is definitely a crunched together film. This could have been At World's End Part 1, also could have been a remake of the first one almost. Mm-hmm. I'm going to give it 2. It's hard to remember. I can't remember what World's End's like, so I don't know if World's End's better or worse. I cannot remember. So I'm going to go 2 Jolly Rogers. Mike, are you at 2.5?
I think 2 for me. 2 Jolly Rogers for me. Yeah.
Zach, you've done the Lord's work, as we referenced Passion of the Christ, to uplift this film.
Jim Caviezel, save my soul. Oh my God.
Jim Caviezel would be great for the pirate franchise. I think we got to get him back in.
Yeah, I could see that.
He's probably aging into a good pirate age.
Or past it. I don't even know. I think he got canceled. Speaking of getting canceled.
Oh, my goodness. Well, Zach, any final words about this film, your experience with this film and the franchise as a whole?
I would say that, as always, I like to come in and be the one that gives the highest rating of the three of us for a movie like this. The only thing that I recommend you guys do is consider in the future, possibly using an episode to review Jack Sparrow, the song by The Lonely Island featuring Michael Bolton.
Yes.
Maybe that's where I really became a fan of this franchise, was from that song.
I'm really glad that you referenced that, because I've been meaning to ask Luke for us to break down that sketch.
Yes, that will be a part of it. The release date of that...
2011. I'm trying to remember what it came out.
Okay. So that must have been around the fourth one, right? That must have been for the fourth one. So maybe in the fourth one we'll bring that one up, or do a separate beat by beat. Maybe that'll be a special tag episode and we'll bring you back.
Jack Sparrow. Yes, please. That's the only thing that really makes me a fan of that character. I don't think it really transferred well in this episode, because we all have fun and stuff. But I just also want to reiterate that a pirate is also a version of a family. So just don't forget that. As you two, my captains.
Your masters and commanders and captains.
I leave you on the shore, waving goodbye, your former second mate, as you guys go on this further journey with this property. Have fun with this. I wish you both well.
We're not deserting you on this island. I believe you have gotten off the ship. I think you dove off the bow and swam to shore and waved goodbye as we continued on.
Yes, exactly. I am on Tortuga and one of those deleted scenes.
Well, Zach, thank you so much, my friend. And listeners, viewers, thanks for watching. Next, we head to the ends of the earth for Pirates of the Caribbean: At World's End.